Okay. The first part of this chapter, we talked about the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. And I mentioned that the Freedom of Information Act has been amended a number of times. There are two major amendments that I'd like you to understand and be accountable for. The first is eFOIA, electronic FOIA. This was passed in 1996. It's called the Electronic Freedom of Information Act Amendments of 1996. And what they decided to do was they decided to make information available in an electronic format. Okay? So sometimes agencies were being stinky. As we're going to find out, agencies try all sorts of tricks sometimes to try to not release information. And one of the things they were saying in the early 1990s was that they didn't want to provide this information, and they didn't have to because the information was being held in electronic records, and the Freedom of Information Act didn't specify the original one, electronic records. And the government basically said, no, 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 you can't use that as a loophole. Agencies are now required under eFOIA to make it easier for public members to identify and access the records that they're interested in. A lot of stuff is available online, and a lot of documents are searchable online. In fact, many agencies hold things, something called reading rooms, FOIA reading rooms, where you can go and access documents that they have made available. All right, so FOI compliance is important and computerization is important, so they can no longer hide behind the original document, which didn't specify that electronic documents had to be made available. And again, some timetable reforms. But essentially, eFOIA is meant to encourage the government to hold and release information in electronic format. Because frankly, why kill any more trees than we've got to? Okay, so that's eFOIA. The second important amendment is a more recent amendment in 2007. It stands for Openness Promotes Effectiveness in Our National Open Government Act of 2007. The government loves acronyms. I will call it Open Government. Okay? And it was an amendment to the FOIA that was signed on by President Bush on December 31st, 2007. Now, the Ashcroft memo was a memo that was issued by former Attorney General John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft said that if there was a presumption, or if there was a question on whether or not information should be released, and again, this was post 9/11, so the country was really worried about terrorism and terroristic activities, the memo said, err on the side of secrecy, err on the side of not releasing it. Under open government, the presumption goes the other direction. If there is a question on whether or not the information should be released, open government would say, release it, don't retain it. Okay? Agencies are supposed to release more information, not less. Okay? There were some other important elements. Now you can track your Freedom of Information request online, or you will be able to, which is really very handy for those of us who do Freedom of Information requests. There is a government-wide office that arbitrates disputes to try to keep people out of court. So if I don't get the information I want, instead of necessarily immediately going to court, I can go to this government-wide office and arbitrate my question. There are additional penalties for FOI offices that really drag their feet, as we're going to see in a few minutes. That's one of the things agencies like to do, is drag their feet. And there was usually no penalties for that, but apparently open government is providing for additional ones. News media status has been revamped a little bit to include freelancers. News media often get a break on costs, so if you want to do a FOIA request and you are a member of a media organization or an academic, they'll often cut you a break on some of the costs. They've, again, reduced and limited some of the fees that were available, that they would have to be paid to the government. Still not cheap, but it's cheaper than it was. And, of course, they had a small thing for attorney's fees if you go to court and win. Okay, so Open Government Act, again, is supposed to increase the presumption of openness. It is supposed to say government is supposed to be open to its citizens. Whether or not this actually plays out in the long term is anybody's guess. As I said earlier, the jury is still out on whether Obama will be the most open president in history. His administration will be the most open in history, as he's claimed. I guess we'll see. Okay. Let's talk about some of the things that agencies will do to be stinky about data. Sometimes agencies will drag their feet. They're supposed to respond in 20 days, but there are backlogs. There are some Freedom of Information requests that have been open for years. And again, the Open Government Amendment is supposed to provide additional punitive measures. We'll see if it actually works. The Freedom of Information Act also provides for reimbursement of search and duplication efforts, as well as the redaction of personal information. Sometimes those costs can be prohibitive, as I mentioned. You know, my friend, my graduate student buddy didn't have $25,000 to get records from the CIA or FBI or whatever, so he ended up not getting anything. And again, the open government amendments are supposed to reduce some of those costs. We'll see if that ends up happening. As we'll see in just a minute, the government can black out a whole bunch of information, and, you know, frankly, that's not that big of a deal. They can legally censor those documents. And I'll show you some examples of that, and there's also an example in your book. And finally, the CIA and FBI, and to some extent some of the other organizations, have been trying to get blanket exemptions. So the CIA would simply say, we're not going to provide any information under the Freedom of Information Act because we're the CIA and we don't have to. Same thing for the FBI. So far that has not been done, that has not been accepted by the courts or by the legislature, but that doesn't mean they still don't try. In fact, this past summer, there was a question on whether or not the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, there was a loophole in some law that had been passed that would exempt them from having to fill most Freedom of Information requests. My latest understanding of this in early August of 2010 is that the SEC has said that's not how they're going to act under this rule, and whether or not it's actually going to be litigated, I don't know. But again, agencies sometimes get kind of stinky about having to provide information, and they will do things like make you wait a long time or try to charge you an arm and a leg. Not supposed to do that, but that doesn't mean they don't. Okay? Here's an example of legal censoring. You go to the FBI files website. There was a UCI history professor who had wanted information on John Lennon's FBI files. John Lennon, of course, was a pacifist. He had a very lengthy FBI record. President Nixon wanted to deport him back to Britain because he was a protester of the Vietnam War. The information trickled down to this UCI historian, but some information was withheld under Exemption 1. And what the FBI would do was release pages that looked like this and say, well, we released the information to you. You know, we sent you the document. Well, you know, that doesn't tell us anything. That's just a whole big blanked out document. Okay? And then after the guy actually went to court and litigated, he was in litigation for 23 years. The pages ended up looking more like this, okay, where there's only a little bit of blacking out. All right? So that's an example of how the FBI in particular released a document that was really fully redacted. All right? And that's really not very useful. You're not really being said to fulfill the spirit of the open government if you're releasing documents that are just a bunch of black magic marker. Okay? All right. Let's turn to the Patriot Act. When you read Chapter 2, you read a lot about the Patriot Act, and I'm only going to talk a little bit about the Patriot Act here. I think probably it should end up in Chapter 9 eventually, but I haven't had time to move it yet. So for now, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was passed post 9/11, and it was passed very, very quickly. It amended 15 or more statutes that had to do with how people's private information is being monitored and examined by the government. Okay? It significantly expanded the power of law enforcement to surveil or to watch us and to capture communications. There were some issues of roving wiretapping. In fact, there's still a case in the courts on whether or not phone companies would have any complicity in helping the government do some of these what ended up being illegal wiretaps. Okay? Any stored communications like voicemail or email can be obtained via a search warrant rather than via some more, you know, rigid wiretap orders. So if you can get a search warrant, which is fairly easy to get because all you need is probable cause, the government can pry into your private business. Okay? Some parts have sunset, some are still active. In Chapter 2 in your book, we talked about some of the parts that were still active. For our purposes, I want you to know one important part, and it's called any tangible things. That's what I'm going to call it, is any tangible things. The FBI, under the Patriot Act, has the authority to request the order of to ask a library, for example, for the production of any tangible thing that's relevant to an investigation of international terrorism or intelligence activities. Library records, click streams, medical records, purchase records, etc. Okay? Let me give you an example. Before I became a professor, I was a graphic designer. I'm not a brilliant graphic designer. In fact, Professor Burrow is so much better than I am that it just scares me. But I made my living doing graphic design. And I would do things like designing newsletters and the like. I'm not very good at it, but I did it. But I still collect what I think are interesting graphic design books. Okay? And I collect books and magazines and book covers that are interesting to me in terms of a graphic design. And I have a little file for them. I don't do it as much as I used to. But let's say that I got back in the gig of that again. And I went to a Barnes & Noble, and I went into their remainder section where you can get a book for a buck or a book for $2. And I'm looking through these books, and I find a book that has a really cool cover on it. It's a really awesome designed book cover. And I look at the price tag, and it's a buck, and I think, well, it's worth having in my library as an example of a cool design. So I take the book, and I take it to the Barnes & Noble desk, and I pull out my credit card, and I slap it down, and I buy the book. And the book happens to be entitled, you know, How to Build an Atomic Bomb. It just happens to have a really cool cover on it, and that's why I bought it. I'm never going to read the book. I don't care about it, but it's got a really cool cover. Now, let's say the woman behind the desk takes a look at me and says, I'm not liking what this woman is looking like. And she's buying a book on building bombs. So I leave the bookstore. I've paid for my book with a credit card. My credit card, of course, has my numbers on it and my name. And she calls the FBI. Beep, 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 beep. Hi, FBI. We just had this customer in here, and her name is Janelle Belmas, and her credit card number is blah, 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 and she just bought a book on how to build a bomb. That's an any tangible thing, okay? Now let's say I went to the library, okay, and I took out a bunch of books. I was doing research on, you know, atomic weaponry, and I took out a bunch of books. And the FBI hits my records and thinks this is somebody we want to look at, okay? So if a court has reason to believe that I might be engaging in naughtiness, they can go to the library and ask for my borrowing privileges. Libraries don't like to do this. They want to protect our personal privacy. Here is the warning that is from the Santa Cruz Library. It says, although the Santa Cruz Library makes every effort to protect your privacy, under the federal USA Patriot Act, records of the books and other materials you borrow from this library may be obtained by federal agents. That federal law prohibits library workers from informing you if federal agents have obtained records about you. So even if my records were obtained from the library by the FBI, all right, the library could not tell me it had turned that information over to me. That's called any tangible things, and it's something that, as a privacy advocate, I get worried about. You are free not to be worried about it, but you should at least know that it's out there. Okay, there's a lot more stuff in the Patriot Act, a lot more stuff in your book about it, but for our purposes, I'm going to ask you to know about any tangible things. Okay, all right. Now, the second major federal act I want to talk about is called the Privacy Act of 1974. The Privacy Act is often called FOIA for the individual. It is all about us as individual American citizens being able to see what our government is gathering about us. Guarantees us the right to see what the government is gathering about us, and, you know, to be able to know the sorts of information that are being kept about us, all right? And we are able to look at that information to correct information that's wrong, and, you know, to basically be able to see what our government is holding on us. It is subject to the FOIA requirements, and also subject to FOIA exemptions. Okay, so if I'm involved in something that might implicate national security, even though I'm involved in it, I might not be able to see the records about it because Exemption 1 wouldn't provide me sufficient clearance to see those records. But in theory, too, there's not supposed to be any creation of a record if I exercise a First Amendment right. Now, I think I probably have an FBI record, okay, because I used to, in Madison, where I went and did my undergrad, one of the things we used to do on Friday nights is we used to go out and get a couple of drinky winkies in us, and then we would go to protests. And there were protests everywhere all the time on campus in the mid-1980s. And we used to go to protests and protest the protesters or protest with them. And sometimes there were police there. I'm fairly sure I have an FBI record. One of my other graduate student friends who was interested in freedom of information and who had done some of this same stuff wanted to know if the FBI had a file on him. So he filed a Privacy Act request, and he asked for his FBI records. And the FBI wrote him back and said, no, exemption one, you can't see those records. And he wrote back and said, well, you know, I have this entitlement and blah, blah, blah. And they exchanged some emails and some letters back and forth about whether or not he could see his FBI file. And finally he wins. And he calls me up on the phone and he says, Janelle, I got my FBI records. Do you want to see? And I'm like, yeah. So I go over there and we open the envelope and there is a manila file with photocopies in it. And what do you suppose was in, what do you suppose his FBI record was? It was all the letters back and forth between him and the FBI on whether or not he could see his record. So he didn't have a record, but now he does, because he asked to see his FBI records. Kind of a catch-22, sort of a funny story. But, again, in principle, we are able, under Privacy Act, to see our information. Okay? All right. Access to meetings. At the federal level, it is protected by the Government in the Sunshine Act. Isn't that a 1970s title? In theory, meetings of federal agencies, boards, commissions, councils, etc., are supposed to be open to the public. An agenda is supposed to be published in advance, in a public record. The communications need to be made public in the public record. In fact, I get an email from the FCC every single day that provides all the public information that the FCC did the previous day. Okay? That's their fulfilling of the Government and Sunshine Act. Okay? There are 10 exemptions to the Government and the Sunshine Act. And before you freak out and think, oh, I got to remember 10 more exemptions, the first 9 are the same as freedom of information. So trade secrets and national security and executive privilege, those are all the same. And they add a 10th called agency litigation, arbitration, and adjudication. So if the agency is sued or being sued, you can't get that information out of the Government and the Sunshine Act. Okay? What it's supposed to do is it is supposed to stop what they used to call policy making over cocktails, where a bunch of agencies would get together, you know, agency personnel would get together after dinner and have drinks and make decisions. They're supposed to have all those decision-making processes in the open meeting, okay? Now, of course, email is an issue. What if you get a bunch of commissioners to agree by email on something? And that's something else that's been litigated. Again, I'm not going to ask you to know the law or the cases, but that's what it's supposed to circumvent, and there are cases about it. So that's the federal law, Government and the Sunshine Act. All right, couple of things about California open meeting laws. That gentleman there is Ralph M. Brown. He was an assembly member, all right? And he passed the Ralph M. Brown Act, or the Brown Act. The Brown Act is gone in California. It applies to local government agencies and their boards and commissions. So parks and rec boards, city councils, county commissions, water boards, all that stuff is accountable under the Brown Act. And the Brown Act requires that agendas need to be made public week in advance or a couple of days in advance if it's an emergency meeting. There have to be regular meetings and they have to be public. There are 4 major exemptions to this. If the city or organization is trying to buy or sell property, if it's a real estate negotiation, you can't see it. If it's a personnel issue, if somebody's being hired or fired or reprimanded, you can't see it. If the agency or the government organization is suing or being sued, you can't see it. And finally, if there are labor negotiations, like, you know, trash collector strikes or what have you, that's information that can't be revealed. Okay? One of my students last semester said, well, you know, that's really all the good stuff. Brown Act is really pointless if you can't get the stuff. I mean, you want to know what's happening with real estate negotiations and labor negotiations. Why can't we see this stuff? And that's a really good question, and the answer is I don't know. Brown Act is pretty good, though, as far as it goes. It's one of the better state open meeting laws. So that's not to say that you can't circumvent it by finding somebody you know, by making a friend in the city council who will provide you information that the Brown Act won't. Okay? All the records documenting that information are supposed to also be made public. Okay? And it is actually a misdemeanor for a public official to participate in a closed meeting that he or she has reason to believe should be open. I'm here to tell you no one has ever, you know, been successfully charged and convicted of this misdemeanor, even though there have been cases where meetings that were closed should have been open. So no one's ever actually been punished under the Brown Act. But there it is. You do need to know it for the exam, because it's a really important thing, regardless of whether you're a journalist or not. I know of public relations professionals who use Brown Act all the time, particularly if they're working for organizations that are intimately involved with cities. Okay. The second open meeting law I want you to be aware of is Bagley-Keene. I don't know who Bagley or Keene are. It's not important. But it applies to all state government agencies and their boards and commissions, as well as to the CSU and UC regents. All right? So, Brown Act is local. Bagley-Keene is state. Same kind of idea. Regular meetings, open notice, public agendas. There are 24 exemptions that are similar to Brown Act. You don't have to know about those. Same kind of idea. And it is also a misdemeanor for a public official to participate in a closed meeting that he or she had reason to believe should be open. And again, no one has ever actually suffered that misdemeanor. So again, Brown Act, local, Bagley-Keene, state. Under Bagley-Keene, you could go to a CSU, you know, chancellor's meeting, except if it falls under one of those 24 exemptions. Again, you don't have to know the 24 exemptions, but you should know the four under Brown, because they're easier to remember. Okay? How about Public Records Acts? All right? The California Public Records Act is the most important one. It applies to records maintained by state and local government agencies at all levels. If you walk into the Fullerton City Council, for example, you should be able, under CIPRA, or California Public Records Act, to see a record, to be able to make a copy of it with some cost, and be able to examine what's in it. The actual rule says any writing containing information relating to the conduct of the public's business, prepared, owned, used, or retained by any state or local agency, regardless of the physical form or characteristic. Doesn't matter if it's on microfilm or in paper or electronic, etc. Okay? There are also two other rules, the Information Practices Act, which is similar to the Privacy Act, and also the Legislative Open Records Act, similar to CIPRA for legislatures. The most important one for our purposes is CIPRA, California Public Records Act. Okay? Now, we do also have laws that open legislatures. Every single state is different, and I'm not going to ask you to be accountable. The only thing you should know is that every state is different, so if you move to Louisiana or Florida or Nevada or Texas, you need to know about what their rules are, same as you would need to know about what their open meetings laws and open records laws are, okay, because every state is a little bit different, and all the rules are somewhat different. Okay, so I'm not going to teach you all 50 states, you just need to know that you need to know them when you move. Okay, and that, my friends, is Chapter 9.